Welcome to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. In the next hour, Dr. Rosenthal and her guests cover both the common and the not-so-common health issues you want and need to know. Get your pencils ready. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.
Hello, welcome to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, the program that reminds anyone coping with health problems we are not alone. The goal of this program is to discuss both common and not so common health issues with the experts who really know what they're talking about. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. I have a long career as a medical journalist and am author of over 30 consumer health books. I have a PhD in medical ethics and medical sociology and direct the program for bioethics and patients' rights at the University of Kentucky. Today we are devoting our show to the subject of thyroid cancer. This is a topic close to my heart as I am a thyroid cancer survivor and am the author of the Thyroid Cancer book. My first guest today is considered a world expert in thyroid cancer, Dr. Kenneth Ain, professor of medicine at the University of Kentucky. He is director of the Thyroid Oncology Program at the Marquee Cancer Center, an international center that treats thyroid cancer patients from all over the world. Dr. Ain co-authored the Complete Thyroid book with me and was the medical advisor for the Thyroid Cancer book and the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook. Later in the show, culinary expert Noreen Gillis will join us to discuss the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook and tips for making your favorite recipes iodine-free. Let's get to the subject of thyroid cancer. Dr. Ain, welcome.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Good, good. I want to talk to you about some statistics. Maybe you can elaborate on where we are today with thyroid cancer, how common it is, and let's talk about the types of thyroid cancer.
Okay. Amazingly, thyroid cancer, which used to be thought of as a rare, almost orphan disease, is now the fastest growing cancer of all cancers in the United States and also in all of North America among both men and women. That means it is increasing at a greater rate than any other cancer. And why that is completely unknown. In Belarus, around Chernobyl, when the reactor exploded in 1986, children who were exposed to the fallout of radioactive iodine from the reactor during that time developed precipitous increases in the amount of thyroid cancer, 2,000 times what it was before the reactor explosion. But that's clearly not the reason for all the increase in thyroid cancer that we're now seeing throughout North America. In fact, radiation would be the easiest thing to detect in our environment. There is something else going on, and nobody knows what it is.
Is it possible that there are, is there anything in groundwater? Are there other environmental contaminants that people are thinking about when it comes to thyroid cancer?
I'm sure there is something somewhere that is common to all of us, because there does not seem to be a geographic predilection. In fact, just a couple of years ago, the National Cancer Institute released the secret data on nuclear fallout from above-ground nuclear testing in the 1950s and 1960s in the United States, and yet the cases of thyroid cancer that we see don't correspond to those areas of fallout where people could have been exposed. So this is something totally new, totally unexpected, and totally unknown.
What are the ages of thyroid cancer patients? Do they range all over the demographic map?
Well, thyroid cancer really constitutes 2% of cancers of people of all ages, and it tends to be more common in older people, but it happens in people of all ages. It happens in children. I have a number of patients who are young children with thyroid cancer. It's about almost 5% of childhood cancer is thyroid cancer. It is now the most common cancer in the United States in white women ages 20 to 30. It is higher than any other type of cancer.
That's fascinating. Well, let's talk a little bit about the types of thyroid cancer, because I don't think people understand that there are several different types that require different approaches.
Yeah. Well, first, believe it or not, a lot of people don't even know where their thyroid is, Sarah.
That's a good place to start. Let's explain where the thyroid is, what it does briefly.
Yeah, actually, what's really funny is, as you and I have written in the introduction to one of our books, when my young 10-year-old son was only about 4, he was asked where his thigh was by a teacher doing some testing, and he pointed to the center of his neck, just over his breastbone, just under his Adam's apple, and she said, "No, you got it wrong." And I said, "Hold it. He thought you said thyroid, because that's where the thyroid gland is, right? Wrapped around the windpipe, just under the Adam's apple, just above the breastbone. That's where people's thyroid gland is. And most of the time, when you have a cancer of the thyroid, it starts as a lump in the thyroid gland."
Is it possible? There are a number of people that experience a lump in their neck as well, meaning that the cancer is in a more advanced stage. Is that not true?
Sometimes people have a lymph node, which is one of the filtering parts of your body that is in the neck that has thyroid cancer growing in it. They see as a lump in their neck. 1 out of 10 nodules in the thyroid gland are cancerous. But if you have a lump in your neck and they do a skinny needle biopsy, which is the best way to assess a thyroid nodule or a lump anywhere in your neck or many places in your body, if they look under the microscope, see thyroid cells, thyroid cancer cells, then we know what you have.
Let's go from you've discovered a lump in your thyroid gland or in your neck, and where do you go from there? How do we find out what type of thyroid cancer it is?
Well, assuming
it's thyroid cancer.
Well, actually, that's very important, because if you discover a lump in your neck or your thyroid gland, you go to your doctor and you say, "Hey, I got a lump here," and he or she should be able to examine you, see that lump, and the first thing they should do, after they make sure that you don't have any hyperthyroidism from an overactive nodule of some sort, which is unusual, but the first thing they should do beyond that is get you a biopsy. Too many times people have weeks, months, sometimes years wasted while doctors observe lumps growing or do scans or do x-rays or do CAT scans or do nuclear studies of the thyroid. All of those are absolutely useless without having a little piece of that tumor looked at under the microscope. And a skinny needle biopsy causes almost no pain if done properly and never causes any problems or what we would say morbidity. There's almost negligible side effect from such a simple, easy test.
Let's talk about the types of thyroid cancer. What might this biopsy reveal?
Well, the most common type of thyroid cancer is a kind called papillary thyroid cancer. It's called that from the way that the tumor cells grow when they're looked at under the microscope. They look like little fingers or papillae. 80% of the thyroid cancer is papillary. And although 80% of people with thyroid cancer, new cancers, are papillary cancers, only half of the people who pass away from thyroid cancer, which can kill people, though it doesn't often do that, are from papillary thyroid cancer. So papillary thyroid cancer generally isn't quite as aggressive as other types of thyroid cancer.
Are there different variants?
Yes. There are some kinds of papillary thyroid cancer which are quite dangerous. Tall cell variant, columnar cell variant, diffuse sclerosing variant. There's what's called a Hurthle cell, H-U-R-T-H-L-E cell variant of papillary, which is unusual, but also can be a little bit more aggressive. The other kind of thyroid cancer that's fairly common, 10% of the time people get a follicular thyroid cancer. And follicular thyroid cancers are different than papillary cancers. Papillary cancers, if they spread, you most usually spread to lymph nodes in the neck, little lumpy areas in the neck. But follicular cancers like to go in through the bloodstream, and they go to the lung, they go to bone, they go to a number of places. And about a third of follicular cancers are called Hurthle, H-U-R-T-H-L-E cell cancers, which is similar to the Hurthle cancer of a papillary, but far more common than that. Hurthle cell cancers are a little bit more dangerous because they may no longer respond to the radioactive iodine treatment that we use for looking for these cancers and for treating them.
I understand that there's also an inherited type of thyroid cancer known as medullary thyroid cancer.
Yes, Sarah, you should know about that because you wrote a fantastic paper about genetic screening for medullary thyroid cancer.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that in that case.
Well, what I'll tell you is that there is a Another type of thyroid cancer, which is about 5 to 8% of cases of thyroid cancer, that's called medullary thyroid cancer. This is very different than follicular and papillary because we cannot use radioactive iodine to look for these cancers after the tumor and the gland is removed, and we can't use it to treat these cancers. So these cancers actually haven't any good therapies once they're spread, and so the surgery is the most important thing to do. A third of the cases of medullary thyroid cancer are actually inherited due to a mutation, a genetic mutation. And if anyone has such a mutation and has this cancer, the rest of their family has to be examined, have a blood sample examined to look for the gene mutation, because if somebody has this mutation, they are going to get this cancer for sure. And the best thing to do is take out their thyroid gland before any evidence of this cancer has revealed itself.
I think that what's been often said about thyroid cancer is that it represents the best and the worst of cancers. We have talked about one of the best case scenarios, which is papillary. We're going to take a break now. My guest is Dr. Kenneth Ain, an internationally recognized thyroid cancer expert whose website is thyroidcancerdoctor.com. For more information on thyroid cancer, we suggest starting with the Thyroid Cancer book and the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook, both available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk more about types of thyroid cancer, surgery, and the use of radioactive iodine in treatment. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Stay mentally, physically, and emotionally fit with Younger Every Day. Hosted by Dr. Bob Payson. Broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Younger Every Day will offer you alternative solutions for a variety of health issues, all backed by clinical, scientific, and medical data. Dr. Payson and other expert guests will inform and inspire people of all ages to look and feel better. Younger Every Day. Think clear. Feel strong. Grow Younger with Dr. Bob Payson, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Do you know how health insurance is supposed to work and why some believe it's not working correctly? To find realities behind the myths, log on each Thursday at 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time to Voice America Health and Wellness for Inside Health Insurance in America with Sharon Ault. Every show will peel back another layer of how health insurance has, could, and should work in America to benefit employers, employees, insured, and uninsured. You will also hear from industry insiders and high-ranking government officials, so join us every Thursday at 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time for Inside Health Insurance in America, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health and our discussion of thyroid cancer with Dr. Kenneth Ain, a thyroid cancer expert. We left off talking about the types of thyroid cancer and with the comment that thyroid cancer represents the very best and the very worst of cancers. On the best spectrum, we discussed papillary thyroid cancer, which represents about 80% of thyroid cancers, although there are still very aggressive papillary cancers. And if left on their own, not treated properly, they can form a very deadly terminal type of cancer called anaplastic cancer, and that's what I would like our guest, Dr. Ain, to talk about now, and then we'll talk a little bit about treatment for all types of thyroid cancer.
Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. Anaplastic thyroid cancer is the worst type of cancer of any kind that you can get in the entire human body because, except for extraordinarily rare circumstances, anyone who gets anaplastic thyroid cancer is just counting the rest of their life in terms of a few months.
And there's no treatment for this cancer, correct?
Well, there are no curative treatments. There are treatments we can do to extend the quality and length of your life, but there are no treatments that we know of that will for sure cure you. In fact, only 300 people in the United States on average get this cancer every year, and every year the same number of people typically die. Anaplastic thyroid cancer is a bad player. Most people have never heard much about it until a very famous patient, we presume, had anaplastic cancer. There's never an official confirmation, but a very famous person with it just died. You know who that is?
Yeah, Chief Justice Rehnquist. Is that correct?
Yes, Chief Justice Rehnquist presumably had anaplastic thyroid cancer, given the way it presented and the way it showed up and the way it was needed to be treated. And the fact that he passed away was only unusual in that he lasted a little bit longer than most people do with this cancer. Most of my efforts in the research laboratory are aimed directly towards trying to find new therapies for this cancer because I figure if you can take care of anaplastic thyroid cancer, my God, you can take care of almost anything.
Well, one of the keys to treatment are surgery and the cancer's responsiveness to radioactive iodine. Let's talk about those treatments.
Right. Well, anaplastic thyroid cancer does not take up iodine, but fortunately for us, papillary thyroid cancers and follicular thyroid cancers generally do. And what we are doing is using the natural method that the thyroid uses to make thyroid hormone against the cancer that comes from that thyroid. The thyroid cell makes a little pump, a little protein pump, that sucks up iodine from the blood because thyroid hormone is made out of iodine. And when a cancer comes from a thyroid, then this cancer cell, fortunately, often retains the ability to make that pump. In fact, my laboratory was one of the first laboratories to clone this particular gene, and we have a patent on some of the portions of this gene trying to learn and discover ways that to make it work better. What happens is people are taken off of their thyroid hormone medicine after their surgery so that they're getting a little bit slowed down, and that tells the pituitary gland to stimulate the thyroid. It doesn't know you don't have one by releasing a thyroid-stimulating hormone. We call that TSH. There's also an injectable form of TSH called thyrogen that's manufactured in an effort to avoid letting people get hypothyroid to make their TSH high. But when this TSH is high, either by stopping their thyroid hormone getting hypothyroid or by injecting this injectable TSH into their bodies, they're then placed on a low iodine diet to starve all thyroid cancer cells from non-radioactive iodine. That's very plentiful in our diet. And if that's done, the patient can then be given some radioactive iodine. Usually it's in a capsule they swallow or some water they sip, and we used to call it an atomic cocktail, though I've never seen one with bourbon in it.
I've had an atomic cocktail, I can tell you. Dr. Rain, before we before we get more into the radioactive iodine part of
yeah.
treatment, let's touch on surgery.
Okay.
In the time we have left in this segment, because I think that's a fairly crucial part of therapy, is it?
Absolutely. Thyroid surgery is a subspecialty, and there are very few surgeons who can rightly call themselves thyroid surgeons, though you'll find almost any surgeon willing to take your thyroid out. The problem is, like anything else, the larger the number of cases people do, the better their results generally are. When you remove the thyroid gland for a thyroid cancer, the only appropriate surgery under almost all circumstances, with rare exception, is taking the entire gland out. That's called a total thyroidectomy. And when this is done, the surgeon has to be very skillful to avoid damaging the nerves that go to the vocal cords. Otherwise, you can't speak properly. You have a paralyzed vocal cord. And also, he or she has to avoid damaging little tiny glands that are near the thyroid called parathyroid glands, because they're near the thyroid, and these control your calcium. If all four glands are damaged, then you have to be on high doses of calcium pills and also a very activated form of vitamin D to keep your calcium levels plummeting.
How many thyroid surgeries would a thyroid surgeon need to do before he or she could rightly call him or herself a thyroid surgeon?
Our surgeons here that are truly good thyroid surgeons, I do an average of two or three thyroid surgeries every week.
Each surgeon does that many.
On the other hand, I would say that a surgeon who does at least two thyroid cancer surgeries a month is the minimum that I would say is reasonable to expect them to have enough experience and skill to do the best job possible.
So the magic number is not a total number of surgeries that a surgeon has done, but patients should be asking, how many of these procedures do you do a week, do you do a month?
That's
that
correct.
Sort of thing, to get an accurate picture of their skill set.
That's correct. It's not the same to be a surgeon for 50 years and having done one surgery a year to be a surgeon who's only been in practice for 10 years but does one surgery every week. The yearly number of 50 is not the same as a lifetime number of 50.
Now, one of the problems with thyroid surgery, I imagine, and I know you see a lot of patients who have the wrong surgeries done, and maybe you can talk a little bit about what types of surgeries are not the correct surgeries for thyroid cancer.
Okay. Some surgeons think they're doing their patients a favor if they say, you know what, there's a nodule in your gland. Let me leave your gland alone. Just take out the nodule. They call it a nodulectomy. Well, that's a good reason for that surgeon to hire a lawyer, because someday somebody is going
patient,
to sue them.
The patient or the surgeon? Who's hiring the lawyer?
the surgeon should hire a lawyer in preparation.
In preparation for a defense.
For defense, that's right, because it'll be almost indefensible.
Okay.
The minimum surgery for a suspicious nodule would be taking out that half of the gland entirely, and then taking out the other half of the gland when they find that it truly is thyroid cancer.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about neck dissection.
Well, clearly thyroid cancers can often spread to lymph nodes in the neck, and lymph nodes are little tiny areas of filter where white blood cells can gain access to bacteria and viruses that may be infecting you and learn to fight them. But these little filters are places that tumor cells often lodge when they leave the thyroid gland and travel throughout your body. And when they lodge there, they grow as tumors. So these, quote, lymph nodes, these metastatic, meaning spread tumors to lymph nodes, often show up in the neck. The surgeon taking out your thyroid gland should carefully examine the lymph nodes in the region of the neck near that tumor. And generally, it's good to sample a number of them in the middle part of the neck and the side of the neck where the tumor is. Sometimes if the tumor is a very aggressive tumor, taking many, many lymph nodes, sometimes as many as 70 or 80 lymph nodes is important, and the pathologist looks at each and every one of them to see how many of them have tumor. So sometimes it's if it's a tiny little papillary and there is no evidence of any spread tumor to lymph nodes, when the surgeon examines the person, they may take only a couple lymph nodes. It's a variable thing.
And what type of thyroid cancer patient would need a neck dissection?
Oh, we talked about that medullary thyroid cancer because in those patients there is no option for a drug or a radioactive iodine or anything to treat them if the surgeon doesn't get most of it. The problem is that a tumor cell is really tiny. It takes a million tumor cells to make a lump the size of the head of a pin. And the head of a pin is probably the smallest thing that a human surgeon can see inside somebody's neck if he or she is lucky to see that at all. That means it only takes one cell of a cancer to grow a cancer back with time. One becomes two, two becomes four. So the surgeon generally cannot ever cure a patient of thyroid cancer. They merely get rid of most of it in order to start the rest of the treatment. For most papillary follicular cancers, that other treatment is radioactive iodine. For some tumors like medullary or anaplastic, there really aren't that many alternative treatments, and the surgeon has to try to do the very, very best job they can.
And after a thyroidectomy, patients are going to obviously be... Oh, we're going to be taking another break now. My guest is Dr. Kenneth Ain, an internationally recognized thyroid expert whose website is thyroidcancerdoctor.com. For more information on thyroid cancer, we suggest starting with the Thyroid Cancer Book and the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook, both available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk more about the use of radioactive iodine in treatment, follow-up scans, and the need for a low iodine diet. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host.
Your life, your health, your network. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Increase the quality of your life by decreasing the chances of disease and disability. Listen to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. On the show, host Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff will discuss how to optimize your health span through hormone therapy, preventative medicine, proper nutrition, and more. Improve your vitality. Enjoy your life. Listen to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century with Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern. Right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health and our discussion of thyroid cancer with Dr. Kenneth Ain, a thyroid cancer expert. We last left off talking about treatment for thyroid cancer. We were talking extensively about surgery. We're going to move on now to talk about a thyroid cancer patient after surgery, someone who has had a thyroidectomy, no longer has a thyroid gland, so is walking around in a state of hypothyroidism. We'll talk a little bit about how to mitigate that, and also radioactive iodine treatment and follow-up scans. Dr. Ain.
Yes, hi, Sarah.
Your comments on all this.
Okay. Well, right after surgery, the traditional approach is to let somebody take a short-acting form of thyroid hormone, liothyronine. The only brand that's available in North America is called Cytomel, C-Y-T-O-M-E-L. And this is a short-acting form of thyroid hormone that's taken temporarily for just a month. And then you stop taking your thyroid hormone, and you become hypothyroid, really slow down.
This is in preparation for radioactive iodine.
Yes, this is to,
correct?
This is to make the body make a high amount of that thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH, to stimulate any cancer cells hiding somewhere in the body to be making iodine pumps ready to suck up iodine. At the same time, you have to get rid of all the stable, all the non-radioactive iodine in their diet. Think of it like this. If the cancer cell is a sponge and you need to suck up that radioactive iodine, if that sponge is wet, damp, and full of water, it's not going to suck any new water up. You have to make sure it is squeezed dry. So the low iodine diet is a very, very important preparation to make sure those cancer cells are ready to suck up that radioactive iodine, be revealed on a whole body scan to show where the glowing spots are, and with a bigger dose to kill that cancer and get rid of it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, we're not going to really have a lot of time to talk about hypothyroidism, and I want to direct my readers to the book, The Complete Thyroid Book, which will tell you what you need to know about hypothyroidism.
Right.
But I want to talk about dosing of radioactive iodine, because you do something that very few thyroid cancer experts do. You do something called dosimetry.
Right. Well, actually, just to mention that there are now new ways to get the TSH elevated with injectable TSH that sometimes may in the future may be used for treatments. Right now the role is generally for following up people with scans later on so they don't have to stop their thyroid medicine to get their TSH elevated. Now, as far as radioactive iodine dosing, in a number of years past, people were given very low doses of radioactive iodine because their insurance companies didn't want them to be in the hospital taking up precious insurance dollars, and they would get doses that were low enough to be taken as an outpatient, go home. Nowadays, we're a little bit wise to that. We really want to give people effective doses of radioactive iodine. So most people get doses of 100 millicuries for the least aggressive situation to 150 to 200 millicuries for tumor that's spread throughout the neck.
And it's important, we're talking about this later in the show, but it's important to follow a low iodine diet prior to treatment so that it can be maximized.
Absolutely, so that sponge is dry and ready to suck up that radioactive iodine. On the other hand, if the tumor is spread to places in the lung or the bone where it tends to be very aggressive and hard to kill with regular doses of radioiodine, there's a technique that's been around since the 60s, for 40 years. And this is a technique called dosimetry. And in that way, blood samples and body counts are done through the course of a week before the treatment dose when you're taking just a little tracer dose of radioactive iodine. And a computer program is used to calculate what's the most your body can safely tolerate. And in that way, we've given doses ranging anywhere from 300 to 900 millicuries safely in people without causing them permanent harm from the radioactive iodine to their bone marrow. And if you don't do this dosimetry, it's very rare that any doctor would venture the risk of giving somebody a big dose of radioiodine.
I see. So, and how few people are doing dosimetry, or how many people are doing dosimetry in the world?
Well, there's nobody in Canada doing dosimetry. There's a gentleman doing dosimetry in Hawaii, and there's one in Seattle. Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York has had a long history of actually developing the technique. In Washington, D.C., there are a couple of places that do dosimetry. We, of course, do dosimetry. But aside from a scattering of maybe one or two other sites, there's a gentleman in Ohio who does dosimetry. There are, unfortunately, no doctors doing this. It takes a lot more effort, and the healthcare system doesn't seem to know a way to reimburse doctors for their time and effort. So it's done out of the goodness of our hearts.
So it's a time-consuming process. It requires a lot of skill. How many, but there are patients' lives that are dependent upon dosimetry when they have aggressive hard-to-treat thyroid cancers. Is that correct?
I would say that's absolutely the case.
Okay.
But on the other hand, you'll find that there are very few studies in which people have actually published data on this, partly because there are very few people doing this.
Okay. What I want to talk about next are, we talked about radioactive iodine treatment. Let's talk about radioactive iodine scans, follow-up scans, and the need for such scanning in thyroid cancer survivors.
Yeah. But those scans are very important. And after you've been freed of any evidence of disease, we look for a blood test to look at thyroglobulins.
Yeah.
It's a protein only made by thyroid or thyroid cancer. Without a thyroid gland, you shouldn't have any in you unless you have cancer. We look at that blood test, and we look at the radioactive iodine scans to see where there could be any glowing spots of tumor in your body. And we also use ultrasounds of the neck. We use CAT scans without dye, because the dye is iodine in it, and it will complicate further therapies or scans. We use CAT scans without dye of the chest to look for any nodules there, and we use careful examination. But Sarah, is it true that Noreen Gillitz is going to be on your show tonight?
She's going to be coming up in the next segment, and we're going to talk about how to recipes for the low iodine diet.
You know, my patients complain all the time when they're hypothyroid or on a low iodine diet, even though it's really not a tough diet if you make your own food and cook from scratch. Sometimes people just don't have a lot of creativity and imagination when they're feeling kind of tired and slow. And Noreen's book has really helped a lot of people in that way.
One of the things I wanted to ask about as well is when we mentioned follow-up scans, I think there's a lot of confusion out there as to when, what the timing of a follow-up scan is, and also who might be a thyrogen candidate for such a scan. Maybe you can comment on that in the minutes that we have remaining in this section.
Okay. Well, as I said, there people are starting to use injectable TSH, i.e. thyrogen. It's the only brand that's currently available to raise the TSH without having to make people hypothyroid. We've been learning about thyrogen over the years since it's been introduced, and typically it's been introduced for people who are free of disease by hypothyroid scans. And in follow-up scans, they don't have to get hypothyroid if their tumor is not very aggressive. On the other hand, now they're trying to investigate ways of using thyrogen for early treatment and for patients with tumor that might need radioactive iodine. I think that's a little bit still beyond where we should be right now. And I typically think that a hypothyroid preparation for people who have active disease that needs to be destroyed with a treatment dose of radioiodine is really best managed with a hypothyroid preparation.
So
that may change in the future.
So essentially, the ideal thyrogen candidate is somebody who has had clean follow-up scans, no evidence of disease.
Yes.
That'd be an accurate statement.
Actually, I think it would be accurate to say that I aim for all of my patients to end up as thyrogen candidates. It would be a wonderful thing that everyone is free of any evidence of disease by classic technique, and then for their lifelong constant follow-up, they should be able to do this in a more comfortable fashion. But right now, I tend to reserve it for those people who have reached that stage, and I don't use it for people who have aggressive tumor that needs to be destroyed with treatment doses.
Now, how many follow-up scans? Let's take an average thyroid cancer patient who has had no evidence of disease for many years. How many times, so they have a queen scan. How many times do they need to be scanned in their lifetime?
Well, people with thyroid cancer can have recurrences 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later. In fact, there's never a time after you've been treated that we can be absolutely sure that you won't have tumor come back. So the follow-up is lifelong. I usually tell my patients, you know what, we'll follow you up until one of us dies of old age.
would you say that scanning every, so is it, it's every
What happens two, is eventually we reach a point where they're scanned every 4 or 5 years.
Okay, but immediately after treatment, it's a scan every year. Could you give me some
interval? We rescan them 6 months after the first treatment. If that's clean, then the interval goes to a year. If that's clean, then 2 years, then 3 years, then 4 years. And we make sure that the as you say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. We want to make sure that when we look and explore and search out for their cancer, we can't find it in a very definitive way before we make the interval between these studies longer.
Now, what the nuclear medicine department is an important aspect of scanning. We may not have time to totally get into this, but if you can briefly comment until the break starts, that would be great.
Well, there are a lot of other tests that we use, too, besides radioactive iodine scanning. Now, for people who have aggressive tumor or have thyroglobulin that's elevated and may not have any evidence of uptake of radioactive iodine in a scan, not know where that tumor is, we use something called a PET scan.
PET scanning.
Yeah. The PET scan, they often fuse with a CAT scan, and I say, wow, why does that PET have to be a cat? I've referred to be a dog, but unfortunately the PET scan stands for positron emission tomography, and the CAT scan stands for computerized axial tomography. So they have nothing to do with the dogs and cats of our association.
So all these imaging tests are critical for following up, particularly when... here's our break. All right, my guest is Dr. Kenneth Ain, an internationally recognized thyroid cancer expert whose website is thyroidcancerdoctor.com. For more information on thyroid cancer, we suggest starting with the Thyroid Cancer Book and the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook, both available on Amazon. When we come back, we're going to be talking about adapting recipes for the low iodine diet with our next guest, Noreen Gillis, author of the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook, available on Amazon. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Steps to a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Growing Up in America explores the challenges, risks, benefits, and differences this generation of children face each day. Hosted by veteran pediatric emergency physician and father of four, Dr. Charles Muzica, this show is for parents, teens, and children. It crosses each generation. By exploring the unique aspects of matriculation within this current generation, we hope to find answers and ways of optimizing this experience for today's generation. Growing Up in America with Dr. Charles Muzica broadcasts each Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, oh! There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time for Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look, this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health and our discussion of thyroid cancer with Dr. Kenneth Ain, a thyroid cancer expert. And in this segment, we're joined by Noreen Gillitz, the author of the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook, which is available on Amazon. Noreen is a culinary expert who has special expertise in substitution diets. Noreen, welcome.
Hi, Sarah. Nice to be with you.
Nice to have you on. I know that Dr. Ain probably has many patients who are grateful to you for putting this book together. I can tell you that from many of the emails we see and questions we see on the thyroid cancer listserv, I think out of all of the things, the low iodine diet, first of all, Noreen, tell us a little bit about the common restrictions for the low iodine diet, such as dairy, et cetera.
Well, the biggest restriction is probably dairy, and the other is using regular table salt, which is iodized, and you want to be able to use a non-iodized salt. And so it's just a matter of being a smart shopper. If you are very careful and if you learn what you can substitute, basically what I tell people is to shop the outer perimeters of the grocery store, of the supermarket.
Right.
And you'll do much better because that's basically where your fresh produce is found. When I shop for myself, I'd say probably 40% of my shopping basket has got fresh produce in it.
You want to so one of the keys is, of course, you want to avoid having any salt from packaged goods.
Right.
And your book is really about fresh cooking and understanding how to cook with non-iodized salt as well as milk substitutes.
Right. And non-iodized salt cooks just the same as iodized salt, so that isn't a problem. And in terms of milk substitutes, you cannot use the packaged ones like the packaged soy milk, because soy is restricted, and also the rice milks usually have added iodized salt, so you would have to make your own, and there are recipes in the book on how to make them. All the recipes that have been developed for this book take into account the fact that people who are on this particular diet are usually very tired, don't have a lot of energy, so you want to make things as easy as possible and very, very simple. I'm a very lazy, easy cook, and so I try to make it as easy as possible for my readers. And this is, I think, what have you found, Dr. Ain, that people are happy?
Actually, I wanted to make sure that people don't get a misunderstanding. Some people, since they're hypothyroid when they're on a diet, they incorrectly assume the diet is making them tired. The diet is making them healthy. The actual problem is that when they're off their thyroid hormone medicine, they're tired. When people take injectable TSH and continue taking their thyroid hormone, such as, you know, they use Thyrogen, they're not hypothyroid and they don't feel at all tired or have any problems. And so they know that the diet doesn't cause this problem. But you're right, when they're hypothyroid, they don't want to have to spend a lot of energy thinking. And your book sort of takes some of the thinking process out of their area of responsibility.
And one of the things I wanted to let our listeners know is that you know, Noreen, your expertise is also in Jewish cooking. And on the low iodine diet, I mean, you're talking about dairy substitutes. We need bread substitutes, so Passover recipes. And also there's a no, we're not allowed to have egg yolks.
And that's not a difficult substitution. We tested all the recipes using egg whites, and I basically made sure there was enough balance that the product isn't rubbery, because sometimes that can happen. So the recipes were well tested to make sure that taste was topmost. That was the most important thing.
Are there recipes that I know that what I keep seeing on emails and online, people are raving about your blueberry muffins for breakfast, and they love your milk substitutes. are there any particular milk substitutes or sort of breakfast ideas you want to toss out while we've got the time?
Well, I think people really enjoy having a smoothie for breakfast, which is like a no-brainer. Basically.
Oh, the smoothies, yeah.
Yeah, I keep frozen bananas in the freezer. I always have bananas that are sort of turning very black. So I just toss them in the freezer, and all you do is run them under hot water and just peel off the skin. It takes like a few seconds, and throw them in the blender. So you take a frozen banana, a cup of strawberries, or a cup of any frozen or fresh fruit, and a cup of either apple or orange juice, and just buzz it. Boom, you've got your breakfast, and they're delicious.
And of course, you know, you can obviously have this when you're off the low iodine diet. Why not?
Well, that's one of the big pluses. People say, you know, this is a book that I can use all year round. I don't have to be sick or happy on any particular diet to use it. All my whole family can enjoy the recipes.
Right.
Noreen, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
A lot of my patients are noticing that when they go to the store to buy fresh meat, such as chicken, or actually sometimes hamburger, that's been adulterated with brine or other additives that, of course, would make it bad for the diet. Have you found in your shopping sprees in Canada that there's also a problem with fresh poultry and fresh meat?
Well, I know that brining has become a problem. Sometimes we'll have to check with the manufacturer, and companies will have their information on the package. A lot of companies, will specify who the poultry packager is. And they will tell you whether their product has been brined or not. I think what's happening is they think that the product has more flavor if they've soaked it in salt. Kosher chickens usually have been salted ahead of time, but those are done with non-iodized salt usually, because it's a kosher salt generally, but you have to check the source, will be a non-iodized salt. And they usually use a non-iodized salt in the koshering process. So koshered meats would probably be a not bad choice, but again, you'd have to check. Ground meats, you can always just get plain meats, and you can chop them in a food processor if you were making hamburger or if you wanted to make burgers for minced chicken or veal or any kind of meat, that would be just fine as well. Fish, again, fish is a problem because you're not having it. So you're basically sticking to more of your proteins, such as beef or chicken or veal, and the eggs for your omelets. You would be using egg whites. There's no dairy, so there's no cheese. So you end up being very creative, but you put lots of vegetables in, and then you end up feeling really good, because even now the recommendation is like for 5 to 9 fruits and vegetables a day. So this is a really good diet.
And people find that they're not gaining weight when they're on the diet. One of the things I wanted to mention to our listeners is we're not really going to be able to take the time to go into all of the restrictions. All of that information will be available on the websites that we're giving out on the show today on thyroidcancerdoctor.com. There's information. It's all in the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook, which is available on Amazon. And if you go to Noreen Gillitz's website, which is gourmania.com, you'll also find information on it. And, of course, we're going to be giving out those websites again at the end. But essentially, there's a fairly long list of substitutions, and we go through it. And in the Low Iodine Diet Cookbook, you'll find all of that information.
Sarah?
Yes.
Before we forget, could I mention that when people aren't getting their scans or getting their treatment with radioactive iodine and using Noreen's cookbook to help them, they have to otherwise be taking thyroid hormone, a levothyroxin, whatever good brand that they can take, and they need to be taking a little bit more than a normal person just to keep that TSH low, because we don't want it to stimulate.
Right, the TSH suppression dosage.
Yes. And that's actually, besides the surgery, besides the radioactive iodine, which the low iodine preparation helps with, that's actually the third leg of the tripod that helps keep people from having recurrent disease. So those tiny little cancer cells that may be hidden in them and may be ready to come grow back someday, they're kept suppressed and kept hibernating by keeping that TSH low by taking just a little bit more thyroid hormone than a normal person would who is hypothyroid.
You know, again, listeners can go back to our archives and hear all about hypo and hyperthyroidism from our last week's show. Also, a lot of information is available in the Thyroid Cancer book and the Complete Thyroid book on the states of hypo and hyperthyroidism and TSH suppression and all of those wonderful things. We want to emphasize as well that the low iodine diet is only a preparation diet to be on about 2 weeks before treatment and 2 weeks before a scan. I want to thank both our guests today, Dr. Kenneth Ain, who you can visit at thyroidcancerdoctor.com, and Noreen Gillis, whose website is gourmania.com. All the books we suggested today can be easily found on Amazon. Next week, our topic is celiac disease, and our guest will be Cynthia Rudert, a national expert on celiac disease, and Claudine Krangle, author of Living Well with Celiac Disease, just out in its second edition. You can visit me online at sarahhealth.com, and remember, you are not alone.
Thank you for listening to Sarah Health Radio. To contact Dr. Rosenthal or one of her guests for more information, visit sarahhealth.com. Tune in next Thursday for another hour of Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.